especially here in this house of living poets and spontaneous poetry. I'd be using some of these material added war pipes is the one that I'd be using mostly tonight, and then pulse, and if time allows we'll see how we go with a couple more as well. I mentioned last night I was out in another pub with somebody else that I was coming to Cork tomorrow night, and maybe this chap would like to come along with me. I'd be reading in a pub, because a pub is a strange place to be doing poetry. No, a pub is a marvellous place to be doing poetry. He said, I heard of a guy once who wrote a book in a pub. I said, wrote a book in a pub? I can't remember what it was. What is the dictionary? He wrote a dictionary in a pub. That must have been a terrible job also. But he said it was a bit like a quarrel in marriage, one word led to another. we've got seasonal for a start anyway. The first one I'll do is called simply Flat Breeze. And the other day, in fact, I mixed Flat Breeze in with two cranberries, and they were all, quite tasty. Blackberries, blue-black pearls, early autumn ditches excite the berry feeling, the satin touch, taste all in pheasants hiding places. Memories of silver cash reward for briar-scratched August pickings, lips and fingers inked with patterns of days stretched between wedges of night. The thrill of communion and nature's harmony, swallows swoop, honeybees suckle, chirping, buzzing, ready for winter migration or hibernation. I place you on my tongue, close my lips, my eyes, and savor again that symphony of autumn. A number of years ago, my wife and I bought an old building in Rock Street in Tralee for conversion for another use. And during the course of renovation, the carpenters asked me if they could tear down this stuff that was inside the soffit in front. And when I went to have a look at it, it was obviously the nesting place of Swift, and probably had been there for long before any of us were born. So I said, absolutely no, it has to stay. And the soffit as well had to have that little opening in it that time had eroded there. And sometime later, I wrote this poem, Tenants in Common. June bird droppings marked the front wall and footpath of my mid-terrace building, acquired for conversion to office use. Restoration work comes on a feathered crack in ancient soffit, northern home to a nest of migrants. Observation reveals the dark overplumage of the swift. My tenants in common, their rights unspecified in title deeds, unwritten precedent enshrined in nature's law. I clean up the droppings to their 50-day stay. Somewhere in Africa awaits when their time comes. We've hard times in a way, I suppose, at the moment. And it is rumoured that more and more people are going back to church, or back to prayer at least anyway. And this next one comes from a real incident. You've probably often heard of people who hum in a particular way, they're praying. Not just Catholics, but Muslims in particular tend to do it, and some of the Hindu religions as well do it quite a lot. But I was in a church on this particular day with quite a bit on my mind, and this man came in just a wee bit in front of me and over to the right. And this is the poem that describes the incident. Praying time. The drone of a tramp, enchanted prayer, stills me in this burnished pew. Primed in hesitation, I wait. Discontent with my world, smokes in the swirl of his faint confidence. Salt and pepper bearded brother to a god whose aerial is not on the wavelength of my grumblings. I transfer my invocation to a nearby takeaway, a friary opened to all but the tramp who may fail the reserved right of admission. A can of rock and pop hammers a rhythm of illusion around the rim of my appetite. I measure the slackness in my pocket against illuminated temptation on the canopied menu and order a selection heavy on the free stuff that leaves enough change to afford to walk home. I dally outside, bag warm in hand. Soon he trails to the aroma. The tramp inhales answered prayer, munches half my burger, all of my fries, and relishes the bottom half of my tea. I'll hum a prayer for you, he pours, and stretches to a burp. After his stirrup cup, I find he has taken all my hunger and indignation. I worked for a while in London in the mid to late 60s, and I was training, studying as well, and to pay the bills as to work in a pub. And in the course of that, I got to know a number of prostitutes who come in, either on their way to work or depending on the type of weekend or whatever, sometimes the morning after as well. Prostitutes get not a very good press, but I must say that as a young man at the time, I was most impressed with the dignity of some of these ladies who were forced to pursue the line of work they were pursuing. This poem here is a tribute to all of those ladies called Lily. They try to read her face in the coffin. Lily Prescott, who used to consummate their desires for woman, now seals their secrets in her mask of death. The someone's son she bore relates his mother's dignity to averted faces, of how at 45 she died old from a world she'd known too well. Her ever longing for girlhood betrayed by leapfrogged youth. Lady Prescott is not proclaimed in obituary notices. The woman in the coffin is Mary Lamb, fondly remembered by her son Christopher and their many friends. Those gathered to honour her memory are encouraged to contribute to her hospice, where leukemia was soothed into peace. The men who search the stillness in her face and gentle fingers hearten for an echo. And another situation, slightly, only slightly different. Somebody mentioned earlier on about the Festival of Kerry, the roses and so on, and wondering if I got to many of the events. I was at one of those events late night a number of years ago when I witnessed something like this. A closing time. To one who knows her, she is not herself, asleep on folded arms at the bar. The empty stool beside her promised a dream retrieved after day. She looked so right among the flowers. A vision in sun-crested breeze, now adrift in frozen time. A hint of happiness in a somewhere horizon vanished with her man into the darkness. A barman floods the house with shouts that douse the embers of our comfort. She stirs. A stranger peers through upside-down bottles lined against a mirror, cold for want of smiling. She finger combs her hair, then lowers herself from the stool. A flower falls and draws her to where it lies among the debris. Barman picks it up, blows it clean, and offers it to her. She seems to wonder if it could have once been beautiful, takes it between thumb and forefinger, half smirks at it as if just picked, then jams it in that glass half full of demons, that the barman whispers, you probably gather at this stage that I have an eye for the ladies in one shape or form. The first lady, I suppose, in anyone's life, their mother, and this is a tribute to my own mother, still hale and hearty at 89. And many years ago, I taught her to drive a car. Didn't have a license myself at the time, too young, but anyway, that didn't matter. Learner, you teach me how to drive, my mother says. Her quiet wish is served with apple pie. I take a bite and munch on what I owe her. This woman, 39, mother of 9, I, 17, who, she says, took over 100 labour pushes to consign into the world. This evening, when your work is done, we'll start on lesson one. The fields might be where to begin. Approaching dusk, she grips the steering wheel. Gear into first, clutch easy out. A jerk, a sigh, please, not a tear. No need to fuss, you'll find it easier than a knife and fork. I talk her through the moves. Now she is one. She pedals juice, looks up, and off we hop. To left and right, the car obeys her wheel, around the field and through two gears. She stops at my commands. I can't believe it's real, she asks. We'll try the road, straight out the gate. She signs herself across. What have I seen? She whispers. I'm with you. Just keep the faith. I squeeze her fingers round the gear stick. We start again. First, second, third, no fourth. The three-point turn we'll do another time. Imagine this, she smiles and beeps the horn. My first enables me before my tenth form. mention away for everyone, and this one is to her and for her, the boss neighbor, Sheila. She did not swallow women's liberation, but browsed on berries spread on the briars of life. Midway in a family of five, the 60s teenager tasted, savored, nibbled at him, nurtured viable traits, bottled others to ferment to maturity. Instead of falling for languid lines like let it all hang out, her winnowing of frivolity exposed the drifting chaff of non-commitment. Hyperbole ballooned into hot air, unprepared for all weathers like the video of hothouse virtue. She did not call for gallantry as a knight on lathered steed, but nurtured fellow feeling, realized in devotion, affirmed with I do when asked if she would take this man. A new ring light held hands, made a London flat first home, a place to consummate and start to mould a man out of another woman's boy, and court him to embrace the challenges of duty so that he could fill his throne as head of their future home. We have two daughters and three sons, and here is to our first man, Patricia, by the way. I said, look at Patricia there earlier on.
Mm-hmm.
Daughter, something startles the middle of her night. My baby daughter holds herself to stand upright in her cot. She reaches from her fright, implores, beseeches Dada to attend entrusted duties, calling their commands. In our moonlit room, I kneel beside her, offer whispers to her cry, reprimand whatever nasty creature dared to scare such panic in her sleep. She tries to tear her freedom from the cage, wraps her little fingers around mine. Bidding grip transfers the meaning of distress. No need to spell my duty now. I am a sentinel, and pluck her out of nightmare. In my arms, she clings around my neck. The moment swells to synchronize our heartbeats. All alarm diffuses in my story of the stars. We must not wake your weary mom, I warn, as I change her nappy. She's up at dawn. She's a busy nurse. In a few hours, we'll make her breakfast. We snuggle beneath warm duvet, face to bare chest, she settles back to sleep. The rhythm of her heartbeat transfers this night into a sacrament. And my youngest daughter, Gronja, was involved in all sorts of things, including Irish dancing and music and all that sort of thing. The driving of fleshes and things all over the country. And then it came to the stage when she was doing her leaving search, and the conversation on that journey was all the different. Into the future. It is 10 years or more since we drove this way together. The road has grown hard shoulders, cat-like dotted, straighter, smoother for our smarter car to cruise us to the city. Where then our daughter danced to win our age group titles. Today her talk is not of dancing pumps or tiara crowned costumes to mesmerize adjudicators. She speaks of career options, questions us on our thinking when we were young like her, and if, like her again, would we still choose as we had been? But we had not been young in a time like hers. She has followed her brothers and sister into the world of her future, while we have been looking after her present. We've recently been encouraged to take up the bicycle, get ourselves from A to B. And there are two poems involving bikes of different sorts. One that was written for one of my sons a number of years ago. It was to be another poem until I saw him putting his hands into the gloves that they use in the motorcycling, into his girlfriend's gloves to warm them, the girlfriend. I was writing a different type of poem entirely, so I said I'd incorporate that into the poem. I thought it was a beautiful thing to see. Biker lover. I wash, buff, and shine her motorcycle, engine oiled and tuned for her to ride to town or to a cabin in the mountains where she meets her lover. I warm her gloves on my stroked hands. My fingers feel the grip that will caress her longer, slender fingers. She takes the helmet I keep warm over the boiler, shakes her mane before she draws the visor down to shade her face. She climbs astride. Her leather throttle leather I have squeezed between my thighs. The kicks, the engine talks to life. A push, a hand gear clicks, a shove. Her feet are off the ground. The engine urgent as she glides away. Red hair behind her helmet waves farewell. Godspeed. I try to figure how my boss, her husband, rides his stallion heedless of yearnings she must bear amongst the heather. Why his eyes are darkened, their anchor, for this virgin Venus just 8 years ago. how he does not dream until each poor desires, as it must once have pined for her. Yet his difference is not contagious. Before dawn, her engine power will answer my night's reverie. She'll raise her visor, offer hands for me to take her warmers, remove her helmet, reveal the fullness of her mouth, switch off the motor, then turn her eyes on long-faced lingos before she dismounts. The other one, quite different, but involving a pair of bicycles and an old couple, and another unfortunate wheel accident in the film. Her space. Her space. The last time I noticed them was here in the garden of this mountain cliffstop, looking out over the city. Side by side on that stone bench in the shade, the hawthorn canopy is sent to bloom around their worlds. There are two wing lights, both his and hers, reclined against the lower greenery. I took their order for his pint and her sherry. They inquired of chef's delights, winced at the trespass on their sanctuary by octane-powered escapers from the city. Now only his bike stands against the bush, as if knowing its master needs to make this trip to linger on his side of that stone bench. Her space to his right empty, but for a sherry on the rocks. He sips his pint, part of the scenery, hair now the colour of those hawthorn blooms. He contemplates a drink and waits for ice and nestle with her lemon. He ignores or does not hear the laughter and the noise that babbles from the tables in the sunlight. He takes her glass and raises it as if it was a chance. I adjust myself to automatic mode, take orders that a little part of me can handle, while I observe a touch of glasses as he tastes the drink she would have savored had she not died when hit by a joy-ridden car. Another city caught by roars and a big heart pump. A lady takes her baby from the tassel of the table to serenity beside a quiet man. She does not take that empty space that's full of another woman, but curls up to feed her baby in a canopy of hawthorn, where a fragrance lingers in accord with her. Go to a pulse, the next question here is, some of you may have heard of a fiddler called Pauline O'Keefe. Their memory and gaiety. a glass of porter banishes his blues. For chase he plays a set of reeds and polkas into tired yawn of tomorrow's early hours. Without a wife, he has become groom to his civil, a troubadour drawing the cork out of the glass of gloom. Parishes of pupils learn the power of heaven, hiding in the gamut, and sustain the heartbeat of Shri Rupa.
Prostate
you stole off on me like the snow without a murmur. But unlike the snow, I could not feel you or decide your colour, nor see the imprint of your one-way visit. Why me? And other questions you ignore. You lurk in silence, hiding there somewhere inside of me, despite the surgeon's scalpel or zoned in radium shots that may have hit but sometimes missed your hide-and-seek. Like you're some gypsy lover with a shack that you can insulate against nuclear attacks and then increase and multiply to celebrate your work recorded quarterly in blood PSA measure while I revive my hope in you. And of course, there are the wonderful people who work in palliative care units, and I recently had reason to witness some of their work when I was working with one of the patients in there on her collection and working against the clock, as you can imagine. Palliative care unit. A place to go when things do not go so well. Conceived, designed, oasis in Maladay's desert, where ache finds comrade and anxiety a wing of hope. A place where saints regard as ordinary those days when pain assails the heart and mind. Where despair dissolves when someone kind, those angels bearing names like Elise or Mary, light your courage through the fog of fear and navigate you through trepidation's days. You find your own way around confusion's haze in this heaven's earthly hemisphere. One may think, this will never happen to me, but if it does, here's caring's own remedial key. I found myself in North Fiji Board a number of years ago, anchored there for 3 or 4 weeks, because I stupidly ruptured something in my lower back, and it was not very pleasant. But it was quite an interesting place to be when you're a writer, because you can't do much more, really, only even though you mightn't be able to do much writing as such. The mind can store up all sorts of stuff. There was one of the characters in there was quite a character, an old man from the mountains below the Garvan, just the Healy Way country, in case you're wondering where he's going. And this is the one arising from that. The alternative. I pick a roll from the sack on the toilet floor of our orthopedic ward. The golden crown of a baby bottle of 10-year-old whiskey peeps to the core of the roll beneath. Alternative medicine for a 79-year-old mountain man whose home is a mile from his nearest neighbour. He has just been told that very little can be done for his condition at his age, and that a wheelchair is his only real option for mobility. Mobility? His grey beard bristles if there's a wheelchair to roam the hills and help shepherd sheep in drifting snow, or in the lambing season. He ushers his rage to the toilets, returns more mellow, having kissed again those secret baby whiskey lips, and sealed again their promise for tomorrow. And, I'll finish up with this one. It's another logical key one, and it arises out of an incident. My uncle's American Wake, when I was about 8 or 9 years of age. And my uncle was also a musician, played all sorts of instruments, and of course the musicians around the place all gathered for this event, including Padraig O'Keefe himself, called Ascent of Music. Now, I mentioned earlier that Padraig was a troubadour, and my young nostrils picked up quite upon, because this fellow was a shower, he was caught out on in the rain or a bath as he fell into the river. Mm. And that was about it. Changes of clothes and so on happened maybe after somebody died and he was given something to wear, you know. So needless to say, it's not this thing. And it's in here. That's a lot of music, but it's four little strings. I remarked when the master played in the night of my uncle's American Waves. Out in the dairy where a barrel of porter was tapped was where I had followed, though he stank like a pup that had slept in the slot of a pot. That's an honor respect, other one little boy. Then stop calling me master after this master of me, he said, as he raised up a pony of porter. And he asked if ever I felt the throb of the music dance in my heart or my head, and he held and he took my boy's arm in a hand big as an antler and pliant as the tongue of a doe. So I asked him if the little lad of the St. Patrick a jig I danced with Tom Sweeney had taught to float in the swell of the music and never sit back in my in a lazy dance. Said a lad who can lather a flagstone and spend more time taking shapes in the air as to feed that old spell when a tune in the marrow breaks in the fingers and through the bow. He sat me into the smell of his knee and fitted the fiddle under my chin, and we soared and swooped and hovered the coorn as he rested the brush of his face against mine. Then he changed his tune again, and I found myself within the wild rhythm of a hornpipe he had made up for the night. I could feel it as he played every cadence, every lute, to his fingers as they tickled up and down the strings. Then a concertina joined, and another fiddle whined. Two pupils of the master settled in to play in time. Very soon we heard encore from the yard outside the door, for a polka on the flagstone underneath. The devil is in the porter and heaven in the music, he said to the players who had gathered. So he swallowed the devil and offered up slow airs to warm his passage to the moon. Rascal, a genius, the heart of Shmuel Lucre, the soul of a master in music. Remember.